This is a recording of the reminiscences and experiences of Mrs. Frank M. Ware. The narrator is Mrs. Ware, and the interviewer is Betty Journell. This recording is being made at the request of the Decatur Public Library. We are recording at the home of Mrs. Ware at 425 West Macon Street in Decatur, Illinois, on August 31, 1984. Well, Mrs. Ware, I believe you've lived in Decatur a long time. How long?
Since March of 1891.
Oh, my goodness, that is a long time.
Yes, it is. My father was George Washington Keller, and my mother was Louisa, but she always called it Louisa Newland Keller. And they were married down in Jasper County, Illinois, August the 31st, 1875.
So this is an anniversary.
Yes, it is. And my dad when they were first married, he had a grocery store down there. And then later, and his uncle, or rather his aunt and his uncle, Dr. and Mrs. N.D. Myers, came up to Decatur, and he followed them to find work here. And mother stayed down there until after I was born, a few weeks, you know, until after I was born. And when I was about 5 weeks old, she brought my two older sisters and two older brothers and myself to Decatur.
Well, that was quite a story. And your mother really had quite a little job on her hand, moving children.
Yes, she did. And to top it off, my younger brother, who was... Well, he was 10 years older than I, so he'd been 10 years old then, had drunk lye when he was 2 years old, and it had eaten the lining of his stomach out, and the poor little fella existed. They didn't do much for them in those days, you know, and he would just... Mom would have to prepare soft foods, and he'd drink milk, and he went to school. And he lived to be 14 years old. Oh. And he was to be, he was operated on, had one operation, Dr. William Barnes.
Here in Decatur?
Yes, operated on him at St. Mary's Hospital. I remember going down there with my mother to the hospital, past the what they call the Weber Fill, on Eastwood Street to the hospital, and he had this one operation. I don't know what they were going to do to him, and they said if he could have two operations, they could fix it. I suppose.
They would repair the damaged...
So perhaps he'd have to have...
Tube or something?
Yes, I imagine. But he died after the first operation.
Of course, with today's advances, he might have been helped a great deal.
Yes, he might have.
Or perhaps it wouldn't have happened in the first place. Well, certainly there isn't much.
Mom was making lye soap, see?
Yes.
And his little brother, or older brother, he was four at the time, he pretended he was going to pick that up, and the little fella didn't know the difference.
Well, that is too bad. But you now are in Decatur.
Yes, so we came along in March 1891. I lived around here, in outside of the city limits most of the time till I was about 13, and then inside the city limits since then.
What did your father do when he...
Well, he just worked general labor here and there, and most of that time he was working for my mother's brother, Absalom Newland, that had come up here before we did, and was running a truck barn on North Water Street. He had bought 20 acres from the Downing people at the southwest corner of Water and Pershing.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't called Pershing Road at that time, of course. And he was one of the, at that time there were several truckers around there. There was one that was Aiken, and another was the other that I had in mind. And they would raise their vegetables and get them ready for market. Then they'd bring them into town and sell them to the different stores. I don't believe that they delivered them to the individuals. And while we were, while my dad was working for Uncle Absalom, he provided a home for us on the northwest corner of Pershing and Water Street.
Oh!
Before that, I remember my father and older brother Osa worked for Mr. Barber, and we lived in the on West Main Street, just before you get to Snake Hill. And they had about 24 cows that they milked, and these cows grazed in what is now the west end of Fairview Park. And the pasture went back to the, just about to the railroad track there. And the ground there was much lower than where our house was. And I remember one spring, we had such an awful flood that the water came clear up to within a little distance of our house, and we were scared to death. And at that time, that's where I first went to school. And at Forest Grove School, located about where Dennis School is now. And then after that is when we moved to Water and Pershing.
Was it a first school, a country school?
Country school, yes, a one-story country school. And then the next school I went to was Mound School, and it was also a one-room school, you know, and we had to walk the mile from Pershing to Mound Road.
And that was all kinds of weather.
Nobody, it wouldn't occur to us to them to haul us to school. You just walked. Then later, while he was still working for my uncle, we moved into another house of his in the 1000 block west Harrison. That house is still standing. Just a little this side of Graceland Cemetery. And then I went to the Jones School, and that was a brick one-story school building at the corner of McKinley and Water. And the significant thing about that is at that crossing, that right out in the intersection was a great big cottonwood tree, and it stayed there, I think, until Water Street was paved. They wouldn't let them cut it down.
Right. Other people have mentioned that tree.
I'm not sure about the time it was cut down, but I have an idea that that's when it was.
But that is a very historic tree in Decatur.
Mm-hmm.
Several people have mentioned it.
Well, then after that, he worked for Mr. Springer, T.T. Springer. He had a farm, small farm, that, well, it was I don't know how to say it. It went from Cantrell Street down to the lake now, but there was no lake there then. Yeah. And we lived where Joyland is now.
Oh.
And I was there when I was about 10 years old. We went. I went in the fifth, sixth grade there to that's the first city school, but I didn't live in the city. The Jackson Street School. Yeah. And we had to walk there from 22nd Street, you know, to Jackson. That was a long ways, too. But while we lived there, I remember one summer, oh, there were a lot of kids in the neighborhood, you know, and all of them, boys and girls, hoed corn for Mr. Connor in, I don't know how it would be, east of 22nd Street and north of Cantrell, but I don't remember exactly where it was located, but it was east of John's Hill, I know that. And he'd pay us a nickel an hour. Of course, we had no clocks to, you know, to punch. So if we got tired, we'd sit down and rest what we thought was an hour. Well, he paid us in nickels, and every day, and we'd come home with our nickels. Oh, I remember counting them, and oh, that was the first money I ever earned, see. And I remember counting $2.95, and I thought I was rich. I think I used that to pay a round fare, child's fare, to go with my sister back down to Jasper County to visit my aunts and uncles, where mom's brothers and sisters, you know, where I was born. Then the last summer that we were there, the 4th of July, they had a neighborhood picnic in what is Nelson Park now. It was just a pasture then. And it was just beautiful and shaded and nice, and we thought, oh, how nice it would be if this could be made into a park.
Oh.
But I never dreamed, you know, that the dam would ever be built and there would be a park or a lake or anything.
How was your childhood different from the way children are today?
Well, we had to make our own fun, and we didn't ask our folks for anything. We'd always, at Christmas time, we'd always get a new doll, and we'd have candy, and we never had any other time but Christmas time. They'd buy a big, I remember having it in a great big bowl, and that was quite a treat. And I think we'd have one orange or something like, or maybe we got that from our Sunday school treat, I don't know. But,
You didn't have the playthings that children had today?
No, and we would, in the winter time then, I remember laying on our stomachs on the floor, going through Sears and Roebuck catalogs, picking out furniture that we'd like to put in our houses, you know, our imaginary houses.
Mm-hmm. And so you'd have to use your imagination.
Yes. And we always had a rope swing in the summer that we could use to swing out of doors. Mm-hmm. And, we always helped.
You had chores, you had...
Yes, we'd have to pull weeds in our garden and...
And help around home.
And help around the house.
Mm-hmm. Did you have electricity?
No.
What other differences in your house?
Well, we had...
And not indoor plumbing?
No, we had no... fact is, I never had indoor plumbing till I was married.
Mm-hmm.
But I was going to say that When we finally moved into town, though, in the fall of 1903, and I started the seventh grade at the Warren Street School, and that's my first city school. And we lived at 1365 North Clinton Street. My brother had bought that house because he was unmarried and was working at Ferry's Manufacturing Company. He went out there when Robert Ferry's, I think, had his shop in the basement. Mm. And he was a toolmaker there for 46 years. And so until he was married then, he lived at home and provided a place for the folks. And we lived there all the time that I went to the old Decatur High School, the original Decatur High School. And then I graduated in 1908, and my sister, after we were here, I had a sister, Lula Thorne. She lived to be 21 years old, and she entered high school the fall that I graduated, and she entered the brand new Stephen Decatur High School. In the fall of 1908 and graduated in 1912. The first class that went all through the school.
How was your high school different from the schools today? What subjects did you study?
Well, we had to take all 4 years in English. And we had to take 2 years, we had to take 1 year in algebra and one in geometry. Well, in our English, we had to have had to write an essay each Monday morning, and that was an awful thing. I'd let mine go until Sunday night. I hated that, but anything else I liked about English, I loved school, and I always liked numbers, and I liked algebra very much, and thought I'd like to have been an algebra teacher, but the folks couldn't send me to college, and so I couldn't do that. But I despised geometry, and I never could see any sense to it, and I don't to this day. But I always had passing grades.
I'm sure.
And then in the third and fourth year, though that was elective, then I took all of the, well, I took...
Business courses?
Business courses. Well, they didn't have
commercial.
Typing. They didn't have typing in those days. Mm-hmm. But I took bookkeeping and... advanced calculation, I guess it was. I can't remember what. What
did you study? Shorthand?
Not there.
Not in school.
Not there. No. But I always got good grades, and so I wouldn't have to. In June, I never had to take the final examination. We always had to in February. But if we had good enough grades, we didn't have to take them in. At the end of the year.
What activities outside of studies did the high school students have?
Nothing.
Nothing? Sports? Did they have football or baseball?
No.
No sports? No, none at all?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
You just went to school and
we just went to school and we walked to school too. And my brother wanted me he just wanted me to take 2 years in high school and then go to work. Well, I was so timid, I was scared to death. But the summer after, before I was a junior, I guess he was instrumental in getting me a job in Uncle Doc Meyer's and Dixon and Anderson's office, and it was in the Weight building then, but it's in the building where Carson Peary Scott's recently moved out of. It was on the fourth floor there, and I was receptionist there that summer. But the first day, I was supposed to answer the telephone. The first day, I was so scared that I couldn't hear a thing on the phone. I had the awfulest time. But, of course, I got better at it. And I remember I got $3 a week for it, and I saved most of that money. And then I went back to school another year, see? And then the next summer, I guess they answered their own phone in between times. And the next summer I did two. And then after I graduated, I worked for them full time for a couple of years. But I never did make over $4 a week up there. And I saved enough money that I could pay cash to for three terms in the Brown's Business College.
And that you did after you graduated from high school.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then I got graduated from that in 30 weeks. And 3 days after I passed my last test, they sent me out to the Leader Iron Works, which was 2100 block North Jasper Street. I would have had a chance to go to Staley's, but Staley's was a very small outfit at the time. I think they were only organized about 1904, something like that. And so in 1910, when I got out of the
business college.
No, it was the fall of 1910. I went in. It was 1911. March 31st, 1911, I went to work. But even then, they were a very small outfit. So one of the other members in my class, we called her Amelia Harder then, but later she was always called Helen Harder. Mm-hmm. And she stayed all those years, and it developed into a very good job. But I was... I don't think I would have... I wasn't interested in it, because at that time we were living in the 2000 block North Monroe Street, and that's north of Garfield, and I could go walk directly east on Garfield to Jasper, and then I'd be within a couple of blocks of the Leader Ironworks, where if I would go to Staley's, I'd have to go on the streetcar, yeah. 21 blocks right. south, mm-hmm. and then all mm-hmm. that way right. east, and then, you know, and it would have taken so long that I was glad to go there. Well, I stayed there 32 years.
Oh, my goodness.
When I went there, William Shorb was president. That's one drawing card for me, because he was married to my Aunt Mattie Myers' daughter, and he's the Sharp, a feeling Sharp, you know, and he was president there at the time, but later replaced by,
well, someone.
That part doesn't matter, but I went out there to stuff catalogs. And I didn't have any shorthand then. I was there Thursday, Friday, and Saturday working on those catalogs. And then Saturday afternoon, somebody had the bright idea of giving me some dictation. Well, I was so scared again. I was always so timid. And I knew my shorthand was written down all right, but everything seemed to go wrong. Mm. Nobody had ever told me anything about using carbon paper, and I put it in wrong, so the printing went on the back, and I had to do that over. And then the girl kept hurrying me that had charge of the mail, because we had to work from 5 o'clock on Saturday, and she kept hurrying me, and I just was in such a mess that I had to go home without finishing it. Mm-hmm. And I think I walked to town and cried all the way to town. And I had gotten $3 for the first 3 days of work. It makes me sick now when I think of what people starting wages are.
Did you conquer your problems?
Oh, sure. I went, as I said, I walked to town and I bought myself a pair of shoes that cost me $2.95, so I had a nickel left of my 3 days' work. But Monday, and then I walked home. I don't know how I ever did all that, mm-hmm. because that would be two and a half miles to town and another almost 2 miles out there. Well, anyway, Monday morning when I went back, everything was just lovely. Mm. I had no trouble whatever. Well, I worked in the sales department then. I didn't go back to any, they were just sending out some catalogs mm-hmm. that they needed yes. some help at the time. But from then on, I worked in the sales department and then in the purchasing department for quite a long while. And then and finally in the accounting department. Mm-hmm. But I never was a speedy on the typewriter, but I did write plain and my carbons were clear. Mm-hmm. So during the war, I had to take down the practically all of the contracts that they had with old people like with DuPont Chemical Company, and they would require 11 copies. Well, of course, I couldn't do 11 at a time, but I did do 5. Mm-hmm. And so all of the time, the rest of the time that I was there, if they needed a lot of copies, they always had me come to the sales department and take down their dictation. So while I was in the accounting department, I had charge of the payroll for the shop and the office, and I paid all the checks. And then they finally had me learn to operate the bookkeeping machine, and I did that in addition to everything else. So I really liked my work because it was varied. Mm-hmm. And so I stayed on long after I was married. I wasn't married until I was 30 years old. Mm-hmm. And I married Frank Ware, who had come to Decatur after the war, the First World War, and he had gotten a job at the Decatur Lumber Company and stayed next door to our house. And he was only there 3 days until he got his finger on his left, middle finger on his left hand caught in a sander, and the finger was cut off at the middle joint and the hand was mangled.
Oh.
So he was staying next door to our house, and he would come over and look at the or study the diagrams in the paper that of radios. You see, there were no commercial radios at the time, and people had to build their own. So he got quite adept at building little crystal sets. And he first built one for my brother, and it did pretty well. And then he's made others for a few other friends. But meantime, he had taken a test for a postal service and had passed the test, but during the waiting period is when he was doing this radio work. Mm-hmm. But he went to work later that spring, And at first he just delivered special deliveries letters, they call them speedies. And I remember Easter of that year, we had the awfulest snowstorm, and he had to work all day delivering these things, and I've forgotten, I think he got 60 cents an hour mm-hmm. for his work. Well, then in the later on that year, he got a regular route. Well, but most of the time he was on rural route number 2 northeast of Decatur, and it was while he was there that he would get through with his work so early in the morning that he wanted something to do later in the day, so he bought a small business on North Franklin Street with automobile tires, and then he added the repairing of radios, and the other man took care of the tires. Business became quite good, and he took ready-made radio sets were available, and he took them on consignment and sold them, and finally the post office said he would have to give up that work or give up the postal work. So he was only making $1,890 a year on the postal route anyway, and so he gave that up in the fall of 1920. And he did quite well until the Deep Depression came along, and then he moved his radio shop to the basement of our home. Meantime, I kept my job at the Leader Ironworks and kept us afloat. Things were all right until the bank failure in 1930, was that 31?
Well, probably. Well, during the Depression.
Yeah. I was even laid off for about a month, and the first week, I remember, he took in enough to buy a ton of slack coal. And the second week he took in 50 cents, and the third week nothing. And then I was taken back to the Leader Iron Works, but in the place of my former $30 a week, I went back for $12 and a half a week. But there was one woman there that hadn't been there very long, but she was getting just a little less than me, and so every time she was more aggressive than I, and she'd keep asking for raises, and they'd get raise me accordingly until I finally got back my original pay.
Oh, good.
Well, but in the then during the during this time, Frank was had gotten interested in raising plants. First, he worked for Mel's greenhouse, I think where Swenson's is now. For pay, they just gave him plants to bring home. Then later he worked for the Hilltop greenhouse, and that was run by the man that had the Lincoln Flower Shop. I can't think of his last name. And he worked there for several months, and then he decided he wanted to build himself a little greenhouse and grow cactus and succulents. They were quite popular in at that time, and so he built a small greenhouse the width of our garage and about 24 feet long. Decided to grow the plants for sale, and he subscribed to a floral magazine that went all over the country, and he would buy small cuttings from different sources out in California and in the Southwest, and then he would root them, and when they were of a size large enough to sell, we would advertise them in this same paper, and we sold them to practically every state. But we even sent back a few orders from California because we were ashamed they had better plants out there than we had. Then the business grew to the extent that in about 1941, he bought a small greenhouse that was in disuse out on East Lawrence Street, and dismantled it and brought about all of it except the chimney out to our place and built a larger greenhouse about 30 feet wide by 54 feet long, attached to the back of our house, and that way he could grow many more plants. And then we also sold pottery for planting them. And he had a pretty good trade here in Decatur too. Had customers that came back for years. So that went on until the Second World War. And in the meantime, when they were having classes at night for people to learn different things about electronic subjects, he took the courses and passed the tests and went to work the next week or so for the Caterpillar Military Engine Company, and he was I don't know what he did there. He worked for them all during the war, and then after the war was over and Caterpillar closed the business, he was out, he was
I believe you said the signal company deputy.
Well, not yet.
Okay.
This, you see, would be, well, it was practically, oh, soon after, yes, the signal depot came there within a few months after that, but they weren't hiring Decatur people. So the first time that we saw in the paper that they were beginning to hire Decatur people, he went out there and applied for a job and for radio. They wanted people that knew something about electronics. And he had been one to always study.
He had kept up his radio.
He had kept up with his studies. And so he went out there and applied and went to work the next day. And that was in the fall of 46. Mm-hmm. And he stayed then until he had to be retired on disability in 1960.
Well, that was quite a career. He was a very
he was there 14 years.
Ingenious man.
Well, he was happy, and that was the first really good job that he ever had.
Very good.
Oh yes, when he was at the Caterpillar first time. That's when we paid off our house.
Mortgage.
Yes, we had a straight loan before that from the bank, and we couldn't pay it by the month. We'd have to pay it at interest time, pay on the principal, mm-hmm. and we weren't able to keep up with the interest, but times were so hard that we couldn't pay anything on the principal. And so when the HOLC came in, we had it restructured so that we only had to pay a very small amount each month. And so after he went to work at Caterpillar, we paid each monthly payment plus $100
on the principal
till we had it paid at the end of the year.
That was a good feeling. How long did you work?
32 years.
So you retired?
Well, I worked at the Leader 32 years, and then I was disgruntled. And so the fall of 1945, I quit and went out to Caterpillar, and I went for less money per hour, but I worked longer hours, so I got more money. And we also worked Saturdays, mm-hmm. and we had quit working Saturdays at the Leader. Mm-hmm. We were just working 40 hours a week. But there at the Caterpillar, I had charge of the perpetual inventory for the cafeteria.
Oh.
And so I worked from November 45 to the next Dad died in 45.
But you retired before your husband did.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. But my dad stayed in my house, and he was 93, mm-hmm. and I couldn't get anybody to take care of him, mm-hmm. and I had to quit. And mm-hmm. it just killed me, because mm-hmm. I just loved my work. Mm-hmm. But then after my dad died in 1945, I thought I wanted to go to work again, and I applied at some of these agencies, you know, mm-hmm. and they sent me to Ornamental Metal Works, and I was there and substituted there for 5 or 6 times, mm-hmm. but they finally wanted me to work
steady, but I didn't want to, and he didn't want me to, and so I didn't.
Did you stay home after that?
And the last 3 years that he lived, we spent in Florida.
Oh, lovely.
And we enjoyed that.
Very nice.
But I stayed home. He had built a house with the help of a carpenter to show him some of the more intricate things. He built our house at 1825 North Church Street. We lived there for 41, and I lived there for 51 years.
Oh, very good. Mrs. Ware, what changes have you noticed in Decatur over all these years? What are the most important things that you've noticed?
Well, of course, in the first place, there were streetcars, and they didn't go just where you want them to go, you know. But people had feet in those days, and they could use them, and we would think nothing of walking, you know, 2-3 miles, something like that. And I sort of remember when we had a Chautauqua out where Millikan University is.
Before Millikan.
I was awfully little. I mean, it didn't mean that much to me. Yeah. I don't remember, I don't think I went to it. But I did go to a Chautauqua one time at out Riverside Park, which is where Southmoreland is. And there was an ice house down there.
I imagine there are people who wouldn't know what Chautauqua was. Maybe you could tell briefly what a Chautauqua was.
Well, they were sort of religious, but...
They gave programs.
And they had programs.
It came for a short time every year, summer.
But I didn't...
You didn't go.
No, because we lived way over in the other end of town, and
I understand.
Money wasn't very plentiful, and so, but I know that they did have them there.
They had
but
talks, lectures, and services, and concerts, and for a short time every year, every summer. Any other changes that you remember?
Then I remember, of course, when they'd... and they'd have a band concert up on the top of the transfer house, you know.
Yes.
And
that was when the transfer house was on Main Street.
Oh, sure. And all of the cars going around there. One thing that I remember is I don't think I told in there that I remembered when McKinley was assassinated.
Oh, well, let's hear about that.
I was going to the Jones School at that time, and I guess it was 1901, so I guess I was 10 years old, and they sent us home from school, and I didn't know why we were being sent home from school. I knew somebody died, but then he didn't seem that important to me.
You didn't know it was the president.
Well, I guess I didn't even know what the president did or how important he was, you know.
He was assassinated.
Yes. And I remember that.
Mrs. Ware, there's something you told me previously that I don't believe you've told on this recording, the place where you were born.
Yes, when my dad came up here, I don't know where we'd been living just before that, but I know that that time that Mom was down there with us kids, we were in my father's uncle's log cabin.
You were really born in a log cabin.
I was in a log cabin and lived there for 5 weeks.
Well, that's amazing. You and President Lincoln born in log cabins. Well, that was really... there are very, very few people living now who would say they were born in a log cabin.
Well, Well, I doubt if anybody.
I think that's really interesting.
Well, I mean, down in Appalachia, yes, maybe, but I mean, up here, I don't think so.
No. Well, are there any other special?
I'm trying to think if I had listed. Oh, one of our biggest pleasures in the summertime was to go to Fairview Park and drink that spring water.
Oh, what was so special about it?
Huh?
What was so special?
Oh, it was so cold, and then those long, big stone steps. Someone was telling me the other day that they were too big to take just to walk down. You know, you'd have to take a couple of steps.
Yeah.
I don't remember that because the spring was cut off by the, I think they used to call it the Seventh Ward Sewer, but I don't know what that
but
meant.
These were natural springs that came from Fairview Park.
And it
was arranged so people could drink there.
Oh, yes. And I don't know how many drinks we'd get a day there. And they were over on the south of the South Drive there, you know. Mm. Then I also remember the steps going up to the streetcar.
Oh.
And I remember...
At Fairview.
Uh-huh. See, the streetcar would come down West Main Street to Cobb Avenue, mm-hmm, and then north to William Street, which is at the south side of the park. Of course, all those houses along there were not there then.
Well, Fairview Park was built at that time. It was in existence.
Just east end of it.
Uh-huh, I see.
They didn't even have the very east end, just where you... get to the driveway east of the pavilion, mm-hmm, because that other was called the Caddo Place, and that was either donated by Dr. Caddo or bought by the city, I don't know which. But the part from the, you know, whatever, that Fairview Avenue, mm-hmm, up to where the house is that the caretaker lived.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Up to that. That was, I think, was pasture in those, mm-hmm, days. Mm-hmm. And that was not a part of the, mm-hmm, park. And then this West Park was not either. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it went clear over to the track, railroad track. I suppose it did. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I told about the fun we had out at the when I was going to the Jackson Tree School and lived out there at Joyland, my dad got me a pair of new shoes and new boots, and I wore them to school, and I left the shoes there and wore my old ones home. How was it? When I went back the next morning, my shoes were gone and I had to wear those boots all day.
Oh.
And my feet got so hot and it was just terrible. And I was just killed to think that there was...
Did you ever find your shoes?
No.
Oh, too bad. Too bad. Well, Mrs. Ware, you've had a wonderful life, haven't you?
Oh, there's one part of it that I never mentioned.
All right, let's hear it.
I used to love to sing so much.
Oh, yes.
And we were always, well, fact, that's another thing I didn't tell. The very first job that my dad ever had in Decatur was to haul the new pews for the First Lutheran Church at 301 North Main Street to the church property from the Wabash Depot, Great Depot. Uh-huh. And then the church was dedicated the 5th of July, or 12th, no, the 5th of July, 1891, and the folks joined that church that next Sunday and had me baptized that day, and we were members of First Lutheran Hall, and I am yet.
Well, good.
And so when I was just a little kid, I always loved to sing, and we became very good friends of Mr. A.G. Weber and Mrs. Weber. I dearly loved that woman. Mm-hmm. And she kind of took me under her wing. And when I was, perhaps my last year in high school, he paid for, or was instrumental anyway, in my taking voice lessons from a woman who had just retired from Millikan University. Mm-hmm. She called herself Madame Carola Luce Tucker, with a hyphen there. And her son, Mark Tucker, was in my class at high school. And anyway, I took a year from that he paid for the, or someone, I think he did it. They were instrumental in it anyway. And then 1 year after that, I paid for myself. But I sang in the choir for 43 years.
Very good. Yeah,
of course, I can't sing anymore, don't have any wind. But in those days, I sang at all the funerals, I think, that our church had.
Mrs. Ware, are you enjoying your life as a senior citizen?
Yes, I am.
You're still active in the church?
Well, I can't. I still go. My niece comes and gets me on Sunday morning. And I was having so much trouble on Sundays trying to breathe. And it finally dawned on me, it's because I'm singing too hard.
Oh,
I'm using up what little breath I have. Well, and I've had arthritis almost ever since I have lived here. I moved here. I kept my house until the fall of 75. Frank died in 63, and I still stayed and mowed my lawn and everything.
Oh, great.
But we were on our way to Chicago to see our former pastor, Erickson, installed as pastor, or as the Senate, Illinois Senate president, you know.
Yes.
And on the way back on the bus, we had chartered a bus, and on the way back, one of the women said, I see there's two vacancies in the Lincoln Co-op.
So you...
apartment house, but you have to buy your apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, oh, I wonder how you find out about them. And so I called two of our women at that time belonged to our church. So I asked one of them who was head of it or something. She told me. So on Monday I came to see them, came in the rain to see them, and bought the place.
Good. Very good.
But it was so dreary. And I either had to take this one in the seven steps down, or the one that Ellen has on the third floor,
and
35
better,
steps up.
Better to take the seven
steps.
Oh,
well, I knew I couldn't do that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And am I ever thankful now since
that
I have.
You've had it, yes. But you've enjoyed it.
Well, I've enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And then I've had swollen ankles. But I've had marvelous health.
You have. That's great.
Except that these ankles, I could not get that swelling down, and finally this winter it developed into dropsy.
Oh, wow.
And I had to be in the hospital. I just was so disoriented.
Wow.
For one day, I didn't even get my mail. I didn't know if I ate.
But you are certainly in fine spirits now.
But anyway, yes. But the doctor gave me a shot
and
I lost 30 pounds in one night.
Oh my goodness.
I'm just bones now, but
But
I spend my time making these things. This one's 12 years old.
Right.
The one behind you, I like better, and it's about 3-4 years mm-hmm. old. And I did it very good. But we don't use mm-hmm. wool anymore.
They're lap robes.
See, these are all matching.
Yes, right.
But we don't do that for these. Mm-hmm. But I was going to say we make them for wheelchair patients.
Yes, very good. Well, that's
and
great.
I have finished. Well over 500.
Oh my God.
We distribute them to the various nursing homes, and maybe as many as 40 or 50 a year.
Well, that's really wonderful, Mrs. Ware. I think you've had a marvelous life.
That's my work here at home. That's
Very
what
good.
I do. I bring them home.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for sharing your reminiscences with us. I think you and your husband have really had a wonderful life together, and you are an inspiration to young people, I would think, who can see what a wonderful life you've had. So thank you very much. You've been listening to a recording made of the reminiscences of Mrs. Frank Ware, and this is Betty Trunell for the Decatur Public Library. Bye-bye.